You're listening to the Humans of DevOps podcast, a podcast focused on advancing the humans of DevOps through skills, knowledge, ideas, and learning, or the SKIL framework.
Through a couple of conversations with women who are later in their career, who said, don't sit at the edge of the room, sit at the table, right? Make sure that if you're there, you're not taking the minutes. You're there because you're an engineer, because you're an architect.
Hey everyone, it's Jason Baum, Director of Membership at DevOps Institute, and this is the Humans of DevOps podcast. And I'm so excited today to be chatting with Tracy Bannon. Tracy is a DOI ambassador, speaker, who's speaking actually at the upcoming CICD Skill Up Day, is a senior principal at the MITRE Corporation, and she's a software architect and DevOps strategic advisor focused on solving strategic and complex U.S. government and coalition partner challenges, emphasizing transformation through right-sized architecture. And Tracy blends together XOps to accelerate continuous delivery of value, and she's just as passionate about mentoring and training as she is about architecting sustainable solution ecosystems. She enjoys community, knowledge building with her teams, her clients, and the next generation of the humans of DevOps. Tracy, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Jason. Thanks for the invite. I'm excited to chat.
Absolutely. So before we even get started, XOps, we're like, how many ops are there?
I was reading and doing some research last night on some advice that I'm working through, and it was actually on test ops, yet another one. The emphasis is rightly placed. It's great that we have one side of this that we're designing and delivering, but if we can't operate it, and that's a continuous thing, whether it is testing, whether it's AI ops, there's no stopping the number of ops there are. So we just got rid of it and just said XOps. It's all of the things that allow us to operate and continue. It's not just sustainment, but continue to improve. So
it's like the industry's way of just saying that stuff. You're shortening it down. There's so much.
And then data ops, and then AI ops, and then ML ops, right? And then we're talking about observability and what does that mean? So XOps just means taking a step back and looking at, it's the same principles as DevOps, right? The same general principles. You know, how do you small size things so that you can get them done observably and rapidly? How do the right folks get the right information wherever they are in the loop or as part of it? How do you swarm around problems? That part is the same for all of those opsy things.
For all the ops.
For all the ops.
See, yep. I'm learning. This is, as I keep saying on this podcast, this is me who has absolutely zero background when it comes to this, learning every week. So thank you for teaching me something else. By the end of this, I better be getting like a master's or something, like some kind of certification. I think
exactly.
I deserve it.
Exactly.
All right, Tracy. Well, welcome to the podcast. And I'm excited to get human with you because you have a really interesting backstory. I'm sure for those of you listening who know Tracy, you probably know some of this. But I want to get even further and let's surprise some people today with how far we could take it about your story. So first, let's start. Like, when did you know that technology or ops was the way you wanted to go? I think you were pretty young.
This is a very true story. My brother and I argue about it still to this day, my older brother. My dad brought home a washing machine box or a refrigerator box, something, and he thought it'd be great for us kids to play with it. We decided that we were going to turn that into a computer. I must have been around 3 or 4 because I could not write very much yet other than my name. So we crayoned on the outside of it. We drew the mag tapes. Yes, I'm telling you how old I am. We cut some slits in it so that we could put cards in it and get the cards in and out. So we didn't even draw a screen on it. And the argument was, who got to be the brains? Who got to be inside the computer? And I won. Now, I remember being terrified when the questions started coming in, and my brother was actually old enough. He's in kindergarten. He's writing questions, or at least words, and I'm trying to figure out what to write back. But at any rate, it was that beginning. I remember that very vividly. And it was always something that both my brother and I just had a passion towards. It was fun, right? It was just fun. And that's, I think that's what carried me forward with it. Why would you not just pick a career where you could solve puzzles all day and have fun?
So you knew like in preschool what you wanted to do with your life?
Sure. No, I knew what, I knew the toys I liked to play with.
Yeah.
That's what I would say. And I just tried to wrap that into a career.
Man, in preschool, I think I was like, don't pick your nose, and like Cookie Monster was cool. Like, a career was probably like the furthest thing from.
I wasn't thinking about it as a career. It kept rearing its head. And as there were more computers brought into the schools in different ways, I was always signing up, or I was always asking, can I be a part of it? Now, I'm going to admit something. I'm going to get some laughs out there from this. But if I look at my high school yearbook of all the different types of clubs and activity I was in, small school, you know, the kind of school where if you tap your pencil on your leg, they say, oh, you're a drummer in the band. So real small school. But I was also one of the officers in our computer club. So I had both my, I had my nerd hat on, right? Had my drama hat on, I did a whole bunch of things. But anytime that there was an opportunity, because it was different and it was always adventurous. So it wasn't like I was doing math, which to me always seemed like you're learning how people have done things in the past. It was always something new. I don't think the word innovation was part of my vocabulary or lexicon, although I would say that that's probably part of what interests me with it now. It's just a constant chronic change that goes on. So,
yeah. And one thing you mentioned to me was that you often felt like you were the only female in the room, or you would notice, mm-hmm. I guess, that you were only female in the room.
Yeah, I sort of did and sort of didn't. I don't know if the word, if it's still an appropriate word to say a tomboy, but my mom would tell me that I was tomboy. Always liked to hang around with my brother, older brother and his buddies. But in all of these situations, it never really fazed me, but I was aware that I was often the only female in the room. And that kept going throughout my career. And it still has. The majority of the teams that I have, even when I'm out there searching for diversity, it's hard to fill a team that's really diverse given just the available talent. We're not helping enough folks come through the ranks yet. So
yeah, and this is a topic that we could probably talk about for a little bit, but I do want to explore that a little bit now, since you brought it up. How do you think that impacted your career trajectory? Like, did it have an impact later on for you?
I think there are different times throughout my career where I think it has, where it has mattered. Although I've also been blessed with a series of mentors, all of which were men, interestingly enough, who saw what I was able to bring to the table. They didn't see, pink hair. They didn't see whatever my gender identity was. They heard an opinion and they table pounded for me. That has impacted me in terms of how I treat others. I don't care, if you're green, red, blue, brown, whatever identification that you have, if you've got an opinion and you're well-reasoned and you're passionate about it and want to share that, I listen. Now, I would say that there have been, I can look back over different events in my career where, man, it was really there was probably a little bit of sexism that was going on. I led my first JAD. I was so excited. All these bridge engineers have been flown in. We're doing a bridge management system. We're looking at how we can strap tablets to the side of the engineers as they're hanging off the bridges. And at the end of all of this, I can still remember this guy's face and his name. He walked up to me. I've been drawing pictures. I'm whiteboarding. I'm leading them through this. And I'm in my moment. And he walks up to me afterwards and is, God is my witness, this guy patted me on the hand. He said, you did a good job, dear. I didn't know what to do with that. And I think that he believed that that was like the sincerest compliment that he could give. He was probably old enough to be my dad, or probably even older than that. He was retired in his 60s or 65, but she's a Pete. So those kind of things gave me a little bit of resolve. Some people shrink from that. Nah, not so much. My attitude is a little bit different when it comes to that. Challenge accepted when that happens.
So how do you prove them wrong? How do you take on that challenge? What is your method for getting past that?
I don't go out and tub thump that I'm a female. My name is Tracy Bannon and I'm a technologist. And if you think you have to give me an adjective, if you feel hell bent, you have to, I get to pick the adjective. So I'll just pick real or good. Make me a real technologist. Just leave it there. And it's bringing that excellence to the table. I will say that there were some things that I was lucky enough, and it truly was happenstance, to learn early on through a couple of conversations with women who are later in their career, who said, don't sit at the edge of the room, sit at the table. right? Make sure that if you're there, you're not taking the minutes. You're not there to be the, you know, the minute taker. You're there because you're an engineer, because you're an architect. So some of those things that said, don't be timid about who you are, helped me. And I actively mentor all the folks on my team, male, female, or other, along that line.
Are you looking to get DevOps certified? Demonstrate your DevOps knowledge and advance your career with a certification from DevOps Institute. Get certified in DevOps Leader, SRE, or DevSecOps, just to name a few. Learn anywhere, anytime. The choice is yours. Choose to get certified through our vast partner network, self-study programs, or our new SkillUp e-learning videos. The exams are developed in collaboration with industry thought leaders and subject matter experts in the DevOps space. Learn more at devopsinstitute.com/certifications.
You just answered like three of my questions in a row, because I was going to say, what do you do to the next year? Well, I mean, but for the next generation that's coming out, I mean, what's the biggest piece of advice other than sort of just having a seat at the table? I think there's a lot to getting to that seat at the table, because you have to let go of all the things that society puts on you, right, automatically before you even start. So how do you get past that?
Oh, so it's going to depend on your own appetite for being a change agent, because it does involve being a change agent. Part of my journey, right? I jokingly say I'm dev married to ops. There's truth there, but there was also a point where we switched roles, and I wasn't used to him being at home with the kids.
Sorry, I'm not to cut you off, but you're referring to your husband. We haven't addressed that yet, so I know that we'll mention that you are married. Your husband is works on the ops side of things. So.
He does. and we can come back to that bits of that story. But my point was being willing to say, because it was the right thing for me, it wasn't necessarily what society was expecting. They weren't expecting my husband to show up as, at the PTA and to be baking cookies. They expected me to be showing up. And when I didn't, it was a little hard at first. There were some bristled, feathers. But that, because I made a decision that it was something that I wanted, but again, it's your appetite for change. If you've got an appetite for change, but you've got to be able to, you can't just put it out there that, hey, I want to be a woman technologist, or I want to be a techie. Okay, bring it. If you're going to do it, you got to apply yourself. You got to be real. You've got to learn. You've got to produce. You've got to have a voice. No one's handing it to you. And that's the same for men or women, but women in specific have to make sure that they're bringing it.
Yeah, it's great advice, and it's hard to think that in 2021 we still have to look at it that way, of favoritism towards certain sexes. And just, and honestly, the first thing that you said to me with the pat on the back, that's crazy to me, and it's surprising me, obviously, that I have not lived that life. Mm-hmm. So I'm learning, but I just keep thinking about what they tell us in I have a young daughter, and so parenting's new to me, and so I'm kind of learning all the time, and there's so many things that I can apply towards it with life. And I have a young daughter, and just doesn't even matter male or female. They say, like, if you pat on the back and say good job, it's not even like, even for a kid, it's like you're not even acknowledging that they're a human. It's like, what did they do? Talk to them about what they did. Exactly. And it's like the same thing, right? I mean, it's like you're not being seen as a human being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would say that I love my dad to pieces. My dad is part of that generation as well. Mm-hmm. And so, and I'm the firstborn daughter, not the firstborn son, my older brother. So I think that probably shaped who I was as well, because I always wanted to, from the youngest ages, I always wanted to be the same. I didn't want there to be a difference. So I think that played in. But what I heard you say is wonderful for your daughter. I hope that you parent your daughter the way that my husband has parented my daughter. And that is, there is no difference. It is, I want you to be applying yourself, right? And your opinion matters always. I love it when I see my husband get angry, when he notices something that isn't diverse, when he sees a lack of diversity, he calls it out before I do. Sometimes that's pretty cool. I think that's the start of the change. I think it's going to take this generation. I think it's going to take you parenting to help roll this over. One thing we can't do as much as I get tired of hearing about women in technology or diversity of some sort, we can't stop talking about it. Because as soon as we think that we have it handled, we thought 20 years ago that we had the right numbers going into colleges that were going into the technical trades, right? 25 years ago, comp sci majors were more female than male. That is inverted again. That's dropped. Why is that dropping? Because we started to not pay attention to it anymore. We have it handled. We got it's okay now. No, we're going to have that conversation for a while. And then after we think we have it solved, we're going to have to continue to have the conversation for a bit to make sure that it's muscle memory. So,
yeah,
but it's not just female diversity. It's I want my teams to be as diverse as possible, in part because I don't have all the answers, although I would like to say that I do. Having just truly different points of view. Somebody told me lately, and this kind of shot me to the moon. They said, well, you know, on my team, I have educational diversity. I've got software engineers and systems engineers. I even have somebody who doesn't have a master's degree. And I thought, in what world are you on? Right? Talk to me about actual diversity. Talk to me about someone who grew up in a rural town. Talk to me about somebody who grew up internationally in a major metropolitan area. Right? Talk to me about somebody, you know, who has an education. One of the smartest people that I know dropped out of college to work for Netscape and then Microsoft. And he's given the the graduation convocation. He's actually given the commencement speeches at Harvard. Okay, he didn't need that degree. So let's think about diversity on so many different dimensions. It ain't just about gender, not at all.
Yeah, really well said. And yeah, I hope that we are that change agent. I hope, like you said, I hope that this generation is. I know that I also think that it's important for my daughter to see me as a role model, mm-hmm. acting at like you said, sharing the responsibilities that were perceived responsibilities of, you know, of women. And you know, I do, you know, I had someone, a boss actually, and I'm not going to say who it was, but he used to call housework domestics or stuff like that. And like, you know, the domestic work. And I felt so sick to my stomach when I heard it used that way. But very old school, not necessarily his fault, but that's the differences in generations, I think. And I'm hopeful. I mean, look, we have our very first female president 100 years after women had the right to vote. So I don't know if that's progress or if that's
first people
about damn time, you know.
Yep. So yep.
Anyway.
Yep. Oh my goodness. So I mean, it's interesting what's happened already. It's interesting what's going to be on the horizon. We have to be diligent. They talk about unconscious bias. There was all of this effort to uncover all of this unconscious bias. And what we found out after hundreds of millions of dollars were spent across all of the different industries is that, well, our unconscious bias isn't really unconscious. We're aware of it. But what we need to do is we need to be able to have our own little filter that stops before we say something and says, hey, I'm being biased. Now, if we can help to get that kind of mentality gone, that'll probably help. Now, how to do that? I don't know.
They should make a pill. They should make a pill for it.
It's up there. What is it, the green one or the blue one?
Yeah, you just take the pill. Okay, you're no longer biased.
No.
They could just make it that simple.
No, I'm a Penn Stater, so as soon as you show me like a Notre Dame or a Pitt T-shirt, I would have just that visceral reaction.
Well, so let's go back. You mentioned that you're dev married to ops, and this is fascinating to me. So tell me a little bit about the Bannons.
All right, so. Gosh, minified stories. Met somewhere in junior high, middle school, but didn't really run in the same circles. Grade older, made our way through high school. My junior year, his senior year, I get this big crush on this guy, and I'm not just shy of stalking him that entire year. He graduates. He decides to ask me out on a date. There's another good story for that some other time. But we just had this love of technology. We both go off to college. We end up getting married. And this entire time, tech is just something that we have fun with. We just have fun with it. He started out his career. It was his second job. He was hired at AccuWeather into their operations department. And about 6 months, 8 months later, I made my way into engineering. So I'm devving. And he's opsing that whole time. And this was before we said DevOps. We just didn't, that wasn't a thing. But we were still doing systems that were more waterfall in nature. But when somebody would call the house, when they would, you know, when they needed to get a problem dealt with, production issues going on, if he was the guy with the beeper, yes, beeper, if he was the guy with the beeper, after a while, he would turn around and say to me, hey, didn't engineering do something with this module? Didn't you guys roll something out? And it became a call to our house for the two of us, not a call for just my husband. So it became a call for dev and ops. And I learned so much. I learned about what a job you have to do when you're on the operations side, trying to peer inside something that somebody hasn't created for you to be observable to you. Like I would have to tell him, go look at this file, go look at this log, or he would ask the question, why the hell didn't somebody put this out into a log file? Why didn't somebody write this somewhere? And so I learned about what it was like to be on that side of things. And sometimes the reactive, high pressure nature of it. So that helped me. So I've always thought about what does it mean to be able to be sustainable by somebody else who may not be part of the development. Now, because we're married, well, I would always have the conversation with him, right? That's what we talked about, right? Other than kids and family stuff, but we would talk, I'd be like, hey, we're doing this system, we're doing this kind of stuff. So I always had the benefit of having my ops at my table. And in the same way, even today, he's still ops, I'm still dev. That's still when we go for evening walks, that's still what we're talking about, is situationally bouncing stuff back and forth off each other. You know, he'll call my bluff on things. I'll run things by him about, maybe it's about chat ops and should I be really putting build messages into a Slack channel for people? And, you know, and he's talking about, you know, why that might work and why it might be noise. So it's just fun, but it really is, you know, dev married to ops.
So you're at like the aquarium and you're running a sim on your husband.
Essentially, yeah.
Pretty much.
I will tell you that my kids have more than once said, can you guys talk about anything else? My son
used to make up facts
just to try and derail us. He would just, you know, do you know that the sun is 100 million miles away? Like, what does that have to do with anything? He was just trying to derail us. So
just talk about anything else.
Anything else. So
was it hard for you to work with your husband?
No. But I think that I am so passionate about things and he's a really laid back guy that I know that there are times where it's probably harder for him than for me. But it was only a couple of years of our career. And then we've been in different firms the entire time since then. So that was probably 2 or 3 years together and it was great. It was wonderful. And then we've just, you know, grown very differently.
Have you ever taken your, like the Bannons as like a consulting business? Like, call us for your DevOps, literal DevOps. You were like DevOps before it was cool. You were DevOps. What, like, did you coin the term?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
I didn't.
Thought that would be cool to have on the.
Well, back in the day,
we could just say you did.
There was a term DevOps way, way, way back, which was actually had to do with your opcon. So pushing messages out to monitors so that the operations folks could see them. So you had DevOps monitors, but it has a different one. First time I ever heard DevOps, I'm like, why are we talking about, you know, the operations team and, you know, their war room? I don't know. We've done consulting throughout the years, but more for family and friends and small businesses. We've never really talked about truly branching off and doing that. But I'm full-time and my husband is part-time now. He's dropped to half-time, which that works for operations. And he also has another business that has nothing to do with technology.
You guys are pretty busy.
We do things.
So was it hard, like with your like friends in the development field that you're like husband's in the ops and you're like talking to ops all the time?
Well, they saw me as fraternizing. Yeah. So yeah, and there were times where it became a reputation, but it actually has benefited me, that people would say, of, you know, kind of the eye roll, here she goes about ops again. Well, now that's expected. Early on, it was almost that she's sympathizing too much with the wrong group, right? Why are you worried about that? We got to be worried about, you know, building this new thing faster. We've got to be worried about, you know, adding on to it. Well, wait, hold on. So I think it was a detractor at first. I think now it's a good thing. It really keeps me sharp.
So let's talk about community. You said it in your bio that I had read. It was surprise I read the bio. There was the mention of community and knowledge building is really important to you. So what is about community? And for anyone who's listening, obviously, community is a passion of mine. Community building. What is it about community that piques your interest that is so important to you?
So I can go out and I can find so much written information. I can find videos. I can find things that give me the raw information. But when I connect with Jason and we talk about this issue that you faced and you tell me how you addressed it, I feel better equipped to figure out how I'm going to address it. I might not do the same thing that you did, but if I understand your thought process, and then I turn around and I talk to Jada or I talk to Joe or I talk to Mary and get their thoughts on how they dealt with that, what's their exemplar? That's how it gets real. And you get to real solutions. Right now, everybody is so barraged with information coming at them, but it's not curated. Even if it is curated, it's still a bit anonymous. If I have community, I can actually solve a problem. You can get to understand me as well. So I'm all about making sure that I've got that human connection so that I can do a better job. I actually enjoy it because I learned so much. You said this earlier, I learned so much from other people, right? In just having the conversation.
Yeah, it's. I think we've all had to have a little bit of that because it's been so isolating. You know, the pandemic was very isolating, and we all kind of sought it out through Zoom or Teams or whatever you're using these days. Does anyone use? Never mind. I was going to say, like, what was that? I can't remember the name of the thing anymore. The original like video chatting.
WebEx.
Thank you. Yeah, does anybody use that anymore?
WebEx is still out there. I had a
WebEx. Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Gosh, I'm like, there's FaceTime. I'm going through all the ones that we use. Anyway, in person, you can never really replace that. And I can't wait for that to come back.
Although this matters. So as much as I've had remote teams since 2007, 2008. And so there are some folks that I never physically met them until 2 or 3 years in. But we had this amazing connection and relationship because right now, Jason, it's just you and me, and we're having a conversation. Is somebody recording it? Yeah, sure. But it's you and I having a chat. That's part of keeping it real. That's part of the conversations that we have to have. Everything should not be 50, 60, 100 people listening and then just the questions scrolling up on the prompter on the side. I need to be able to have 1 for 2 for 5 people in a room having the conversation. That we have to put more emphasis on that personalization and that part of community building. That's really important to me. Really important.
Collaboration, right? I mean, it's the collaboration. Yeah. And there's a quote, and you and I spoke before. We spoke last week on a completely different topic, but we both shared that we like, I guess it's sailing quotes, oddly enough, of all things to connect on. Because I have the quote that I always go to, the JFK quote, a rising tide lifts all boats. And then you came back with another sailing quote.
Yes, a smooth sea never made a skillful sailor.
See, there you go. So who knew? Scale. Did you hike ever in the like to Everest? No, I'm just kidding. We found this weird thing where we can link one podcast to another.
Not Everest. I did hike the Inca Trail. I've been on glaciers on 3 continents so far.
Whoa!
So I do like adventure, right? If you paint the picture of Bannon of this Bannon. I like adventure. So, that's very part cool. of the thrill. Yeah.
That's what we do towards the end of this podcast. We start getting a little lighter. So, like, what's one thing about you that nobody knows that you've never shared?
Oh, that nobody knows. And I'm going to put out there in the public ether.
Yes.
That nobody knows. Well, somebody's got to know it.
Well, someone might know, but maybe your colleagues don't know. We said you were on, you hiked on 3 different glaciers.
I would say that maybe not everybody knows that I'm an adventure junkie. And this, tying it back to my husband, he is my sanity check. He's the one who says, no. That is too dangerous. So I have yielded, I've given him the right. And he rarely does this to say, no, that one is too dangerous. But whenever I come up with an idea, I was the kid in the back of the car when your dad would say, oh, I should have filled up. We're running a little low on gas. I was hoping that we'd run out of gas so that we could have an adventure. So I am truly an adventure junkie.
That's so similar to my dad. We used to, we would get lost on purpose. We used to love getting lost because he said, well, that's the only way that you can find new places.
Yeah.
Very cool.
I would love to meet your dad.
Yeah. What's the last song you listened to on your device?
I will have to give you the version that I would cake. Is that Flo Rida who does Cake?
Okay.
Yeah. There are a couple other ones that I like by Tones and I that have been top of mind lately that I've been dancing and singing around about. So, yeah.
I decided that's going to be my new way of asking, because rather than what music are you listening to right now, I just want to know exactly what was the last thing that you had.
It was the Cake song, and I was trying to annoy my husband to get him out of bed.
There you go. Mine was Little Wing, Eric Clapton. Because I was listening to the Crossroads album. Cool.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, thank you so much, Tracy, for being on this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. It was a lot of fun having you on.
This is a hoot. I would love to get together and talk again, even if it isn't on a podcast. Let's make sure we connect.
We can talk every week. It's totally fine. Whenever you want, just call.
I'm a topic. I'll show up.
Awesome. Tracy's going to be speaking at the upcoming CICD SkillUp Day, and her session is titled DevOps Missing Link Data. Mm-hmm. Did I get that all right?
You did. And we'll talk about the fact that nobody thinks about, we're shifting everything left except for test data and test data management. We're just leaving it. And we're still having some problems that we don't need to have. So
there you go. So don't miss it. In the future, I want to start getting questions from you, our valued listeners, and we will read them on the podcast. Maybe it will be for the guest, or maybe it will just be for me, or maybe it'll be for someone else. Maybe we'll bring someone else to answer questions. I have no idea. We'll figure it out as we go. So write us some questions, because we want to read them. And thank you so much for listening to this episode. I'm going to end this podcast the same as I always do, encouraging you to become a premium member of DevOps Institute to get access to even more great resources just like this one and belong to a community. Until next time, stay safe, stay healthy, and most of all, stay human, live long, and prosper.
Ciao.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. Don't forget to join our global community to get access to even more great resources like this. Until next time, remember, you are part of something bigger than yourself. You belong.